Welcome to the Social Ideas Podcast, brought to you by the Cambridge Centre for Social Innovation. This series looks through the lens of those striving for a better world.
My name is Zakia Mulawigiri, and I'm the founder of Invisible Cities.
Zakia is a winner of this year's Cambridge Social Innovation Prize, which is awarded by Trinity Hall and the Cambridge Centre for Social Innovation at the University of Cambridge. After congratulating Zakia on her win, I asked her how she felt about the prize.
Thank you so much. I mean, it's absolutely amazing and unbelievable, really. I think the biggest thing for me is a recognition of all the work that has got into a social venture, into Invisible Cities over the last 7 years. And also a big celebration, because I think, you know, a prize is always nice, but it's a moment to stop and celebrate and also acknowledge all the hard work that I tend to forget, because when you're in it day to day, you just think it becomes so normal. But actually, it's absolutely amazing and lovely and humbling to know that this is being recognized. So and it came definitely as a surprise. So it's lovely.
Before we go any further, can you tell me what Invisible Cities is?
Invisible Cities is a social enterprise. And what we do is we train people who have experienced homelessness to become tour guides of their own city and offer walking tours that the guides have developed to tourists, but also locals, schools, students, corporate teams, etc. So we very much function as a tour operator. If you're coming to one of our cities for the weekend, you can book one of our tours, meet your guide, have a great experience, and then continue on with your trip in the city. But we educate people in all the places we're in on topics that matter to us. So whether that's bits of our history that's not often talked about, whether it's women representation, Black history, certain issues with certain communities, etc., or just a celebration of our cities. So Invisible Cities started, I started in Edinburgh in 2016. And then since then, we have expanded to 6 different locations in the UK. So Glasgow as well in Scotland, but also Manchester and York, Cardiff and Liverpool, which are our 2 new cities. So it's really exciting. And the idea is really to provide people with an opportunity for new things, for them to meet other people, to develop new skills and tell their stories, when too often people who find themselves in that kind of homelessness journey feel like their voices are not heard and that they are invisible, hence the name of the organization. So let people have their voices heard while providing them with opportunities to use Invisible Cities as a stepping stone towards other things, whether that's go back to school, whether that's finding full-time jobs somewhere, becoming public speakers, becoming guides, et cetera, et cetera.
Fascinating, really is. How did you come up with this?
So I come from France, whether, I don't know if people can hear it in my accent. Some people do, some people don't. So it's, I don't take offense either way. And I used to be a teacher, but actually teaching wasn't quite for me. And I started working over 10 years ago with homelessness organizations, and a lot of them always using innovative ways of supporting people. So I worked for a while with the Homeless World Cup Foundation, which uses the power of football, soccer, to support people. And again, it's very much based on using all the tools that football bring you, right? So team spirit, scoring goals, handling defeat, representing a city or a nation, all of these things to give people a bit of confidence back. I also worked closely with The Big Issue, you know, the street magazine, and again, using entrepreneurial skills to support people. So I really wanted to do something that was unconventional in terms of supporting people experiencing homelessness, not providing housing or, you know, organizing an employability program, just maybe going outside of the box slightly. And travel for me personally has always been such an important part of my life. I've been very privileged to work and travel. So for my work and my career have always taken me to loads of different places. And I thought, you know, thanks to travel, I can meet other people, I can discover their stories, and I can grow as a person. So why not combine the two, supporting people while using the power of travel and the power of meeting locals in a brand new city and hearing their stories. So that was very much the base. And in 2016, I traveled to Greece, where the big issue equivalent there, Shedia, had started thinking about providing walking tours as well as selling the magazine on the streets of Athens. And I thought, this is it. I think if I can bring that back to Scotland, where I live, then that could make a real impact. And to be completely honest, I thought, you know, maybe I can work in collaboration with the big issue, and for it to become a project they could then take on and provide as an alternative to some of the vendors. I never for one second imagined that it would be its own thing. And then, of course, because of budgets and time and capacity, a lot of people were like, I think it's a good idea, but we don't have the time, we don't have the capacity, we don't have the money for it. So try and do it and we will support you, but we can't ourselves. And this is how Invisible Cities was born.
How does it work then? How do you find these people who have experienced homelessness, who are going through homelessness, to come to you and become a tour guide?
So unlike other organizations or tour operators, we train people first and then we hire them. So what we do is we will put a call out to various organizations, charities, hostels, the big issue being one of them, for example, and say to them that we are ready to train a new cohort of people, and they will refer people on to us. So that's a very important step because it kind of provides us with a referral system both ways. So we know that these people are receiving support from the Salvation Army or from their local accommodation, whatever it may be. And they also know that we come referred to them by somebody they trust already. So people sign up to our training and go through a specific program with us. And a lot of the training includes what we call transferable skills. So that's public speaking, customer service, confidence building, and an exploration of our local area. So a lot of visits to museums, galleries, venues, etc. And then from that group of people who have trained with us, we then employ a certain amount of them to become guides. So what we do is we ask them to let us know they would like to be considered as guides. They go through an interview process and then we recruit them. And that's very important because we want to provide an environment that is as true and as mimicking as what happens in the real world as anywhere else. So if a job at the end of it was guaranteed, I think that would kind of not work out so well. So that's why we do interview readiness classes, etc. And so then we hire them. And part of the training and part of the onboarding for them is also to develop a tour of their own. So we ask them to think about ideas, stories they want to tell. Maybe that starts with a theme they're really passionate about. Maybe it starts with a character they're really passionate about or an issue they have experienced. Or it's a very historical tour. It doesn't really matter, but each of our guides has a specific tour that they offer. And when they start, it's okay if they don't have that ready. They can start as part of the team because we also have a generic tour in each of our cities. But it's important they get to the point where they deliver their own niche tour. That is the one kind of flag that they wave all the time. So from then on, we offer our tours on our website, on social media channels, via a whole network of tourism partners. We work with hotels. We work with OTAs, online travel agents. So that's Airbnb, Expedia, Booking.com, things like that. But also travel agents, destination management companies, universities. One of our biggest customers is Edinburgh University. So for Freshers Week, they'll send students to all of our tours to explore the city, especially if they're newcomers into the city. It's a fun way to discover what Edinburgh's like.
And what are the long-term benefits for the people that are your tour guides that get involved with what you do?
The idea of our training, first of all, which is the biggest piece of work that we deliver, is to provide people with skills to then go and do all the things that they want to do. And that could be that they want full-time work somewhere, or they want even part-time work somewhere, which when you guide is not necessarily what you get, because guiding can be casual, it can be very seasonal. So we are very honest and set those expectations from the get-go. But if people want to find full-time employment, we will support them through that. And so there's that, using the training as a stepping stone towards other things. Maybe they want to go back to school, or they want to reunite with family. We find that a lot of people who sign up to the training actually do so because they want to meet other people. They want to socialize, but they also want to build on their confidence. And they don't know what the future looks like, but they know that they're ready to take on the next step, and that they want to kind of work on themselves and skills and figure out what the next chapter is. Then for our guides themselves, obviously we provide them with employment. So they get employed, they get paid, and they get to meet people from all around the world. They feel empowered by telling their stories. And I think there's something a little bit magic about the fact that if you come to one of our cities, the first person you meet, if you're an American tourist, for example, is one of our guides. So they represent Manchester, they represent Edinburgh, they represent York, etc. But the idea is very much that they should also work on what the next chapter is. And some of them want to become full-time guides and can start that career, which is great. And we'll support them by actually being recruited by other tour companies. So I always say we're probably the only operator that actively wants them to be headhunted by others. But they might want to work in hospitality and tourism, or they might want to kind of work on their relationships, as I said. So to date, we trained about 110 people. But not all of them, only 20% of them became guides at some point. And some of them became guides for a short time and then moved on. You know, we have a trainee who's become a guide who's now a bus driver. So nothing full time and nothing to do with, well, I mean, you could argue that it has to do with tourism or people who go back to school or people who start their own business as well, because having that freedom that guiding can bring you also means you have the skills to work in your own time at your own pace. So that sometimes leads to also people wanting to start small businesses.
You've spoken earlier about the different partnerships you have, but I'm interested in the benefits to the wider community who come to you and say, hey, I'd like to go on this tour, or I want to find out more about my city through your organization. How do they benefit?
The tours are designed to break down the stigma that may exist around homelessness. So a lot of people, and rightly so, I think, when you see people on the streets, you don't know their story. You don't know what they've gone through. You don't know what their current situation is. And it's very hard to stop and say, right, John, what is your life story? Tell me all about it. So I think people are definitely curious and want to know more about homelessness and the reasons why people become homeless, but they don't know how to do that. And I think the tours give them an opportunity to have this conversation without it being awkward, because we have created an excuse in a way through the tour to do that. So we do talk about things like addiction, prison, the care system, being part of the LGBTQ+ community, and how sometimes that, you know, being part of the military, and how sometimes that leads to experiencing homelessness. So there's an education part that a lot more and more people are really in wanting to kind of explore. And then there are people who want to explore the city. So I would, if I went on holiday, I would do a walking tour and think, okay, I might as well do one which has an impact locally. So do the tour that they would have done with any regular company anyway, but are happy to know that 100% of their money is used towards the cause of supporting more and more people. But I think they benefit because they realize that everyone has a great story to tell. everyone has the skills to be entertainers, to be wonderful tour guides, and that homelessness doesn't always look like what they thought it did, you know. And we try to be as non-judgmental as possible. You know, it's okay if you don't know, and if you have never spoken to somebody on the street or somebody who has experienced homelessness, the likelihood is you have known somebody who has been homeless at some point, but you don't know, because that can be hidden, or that can be homelessness by sofa surfing. So there's a lot of different things. And I think the piece of feedback we get the most is that people were really knowledgeable. Our guides know so much, and we have to say they are tour guides, so yes, they do know a lot. The idea is they should know more than you so on the city that you're going to, and that they feel like they've met a friend in that city. So I think those two things, you know, all the knowledge and showcasing how capable they are, plus then creating that personal relationship with somebody who's so far out from your world, sums up really well what we want to do through the tours. Create a bond with someone, you know, that has maybe had a harder time than you, or yeah.
Why do you think people's attitudes now are changing when it comes to social enterprises and working with or buying from, engaging in some way with an organization that is creating social impact?
I think what is powerful about social enterprises is the fact that we still provide services that, or items, products that are needed, right? So whether it's a coffee like Change Please, whether it's a tea company like Nemi Teas or a tour, those are products that people would buy regardless. They would go for them. So I think the awareness of social enterprise has grown massively over the last 7 years in my time as at Invisible Cities, but also that if we provide the quality that you would have through this a similar product that isn't social enterprise, but the add-on, having the add-on of the social impact, people will go for that. And I think a lot of social enterprises have been really clever in explaining that's exactly what they do. You know, they are as good quality as anything else. Our tours are as great as other tours provided by other operators. And we work exactly the same. You know, you can review us on TripAdvisor. You can review us on Google Reviews. You know, it's exactly the same, except that we have an add-on, which is that social impact. And I think people have understood that more and more. And maybe also when are now deciding where their money should go. And that maybe is a political thing, an economic thing, you know, when you have to be more careful where you put your money, how you spend your pennies, then you might as well want it to have an impact for the wider community. But there's definitely been a lot of work around promoting and highlighting social enterprises by different organizations, by different institutions, and now we kind of seeing the result of that.
As we mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, you are one of the five winners for the Cambridge Social Innovation Prize. This is the fifth anniversary of the prize. You have won £10,000, and that is, as a founder, for you to spend on personal development, spend on traveling for personal development, et cetera, et cetera. But how do you feel that this not just the accolade of winning the prize, but actually the £10,000, how is that going to help you?
So I've now been running Invisible Cities for 7 years. And of course, in that time, it doesn't feel like it's been the same old 7 years, right? Because you're in different phases. So starting up and everything is in the rush and you have to prove it and make it. And then you're growing, and we've grown massively over the last 7 years. So there's not one day that feels the same, even today in 2023, especially having had 2 years of COVID in the middle. But I think I've come to realize that now the team that's around me and the guides could carry on without me. And also personally, I would want to work on something else. So what it means to me is having a lot of security or possibility to explore what that would look like without having to worry about it. So I take a lot of passion and learning from travel, as I said before. And so I think traveling to discover what other ideas are out there, what other people are doing, whether it's in the space of tourism, which I've learned to know and understand over the last few years, or within homelessness, I'm very excited to start thinking about what I could do, where I could go to explore whether what I could bring back home. And that's very much my plan. You know, I think it felt that the prize came at a time that was right, because if it had been last year, 2 years ago, I don't know if I would have really been able to say those words that now I'm thinking, you know, of what is the next step for me personally. And I think it's a wonderful step in an organization's journey where the founder then says, okay, what else can happen without me in the picture? Exciting for the organization, exciting for me too. So I would like to explore that, whether that's in the UK, because there are wonderful areas where work is being done that I would like to learn about, or around the world, and see one where my passion would lie, where what area I would like to work on, and then what idea specifically I would like to bring back. Whether that means founding something else, I don't know, because it's a big, I'm not going to lie and say absolutely I'll found another organization. It's a lot of work and tears and pain, but maybe it's, you know, what other organizations are doing, I don't know. So I think it's, what format is that, what area is that in, and what does that look like for me? So that's my plan, using the prize and kind of thinking about the next steps.
Congratulations to Zakia Mulawi-Gehi, founder and CEO of Invisible Cities and one of the Cambridge Social Innovation Prize winners for 2023. You can find out more about the Cambridge Centre for Social Innovation by following us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, and YouTube.